sometimes one of the best ways to understand your life is to see it as a story. And to, because stories, myths, fairy tales, legends are all forms of the information from the archetypal realms. And before you incarnated, as you chose your 12 archetypes, mythologies accompany archetypes. So you have, for example, the story of orphans, and it gives you Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, or Bambi, or The Little Mermaid, Hansel and Greta, Cinderella, and it goes on and on and on. And each one of those characters has the same spiritual mission, which is the one that I was talking to you about yesterday, which is the transformation and empowerment of themselves. So they have to go on journeys by themselves. The Little Mermaid had to break away from her father so she could get her own fifth chakra. You know, but if you could see your life as an alchemist through these stories, then it's possible, and I teach people this in sacred contracts, it's possible to look at your contract and to take a position as to what story you are actually living. And I'll give you an example of this. Two people, one woman told me her story. I love this. From a physical point of view, this is the physical details of your life. This is an alchemical formula that you're going to use now. In your first column, as we were going through the physical details of her life, first chakra, she was born into a very wealthy family. Second chakra, siblings, etc., a brother. Third was her role in the physical family. She was second in command. Her brother was older. This is her center of self-esteem. This is the third chakra that we were going into now anyway. This is your self-esteem place. This is your center of attack and defense. This is the part of your body when I talk to you and say, will you please answer a question? You do this, which tells me you don't want to. And you just as soon I go back to my room. This is that center of power. The next is your journey that you move up into symbolically interpreting something. So what happened is, here's the first column data. Family, wealthy, parents die, her brother is listed as executor of the will. I think this is hilarious. What she then discovers, what her brother can't wait to tell her, is that she's an orphan and therefore does not qualify for number two. Now look at the language. Three, you yourself are an orphan, therefore watch how it incarnates. Next to the second chakra, you do not qualify for any money from the tribe. It made it all the way fully to the physical world. She gets a lawyer. In tracking the history of the family, etc., she discovers, guess what, ho-hum, he's an orphan. So what do we have here but the story of Hansel and Gretel? And how Hansel and Gretel then had to band together to deal with the wicked witch who was the law and legal system that Hansel had created, because as a result of his trying to get her and disqualify her from the will by saying only blood could inherit, he cut himself out. So the rest of the tribe and his sister and brother went to battle over the situation, and I met her in the middle of this. And as she was talking to me, and I said, do you understand that you're Gretel and this is Hansel? And with that in mind, we talked about how would Hansel and Gretel deal with this situation. We used the dynamics of the story of Hansel and Gretel as a way of charting how she would handle her relatives and the stress on the interior, so that when she came actually back into her physical life, she could engage with the legal system, with her brother, everything, holding in her mind that she was living a version of Hansel and Gretel. Isn't that wild? I think that's just incredible. Let me show you another one. I'm going to, because this one, I'll take you first in here, and then I'm going to tell you a story that matches it. Your third chakra, then, is that part of you that is caught up in what creates your self-esteem. One of the ways people lose their self-esteem or have never had it, they probably have never had it, and desperately want it, is to get into a horrible, horrible shadow orbit of needing the approval of somebody in their life. And that without the approval, they can't go further into any level. They can't, without somebody's permission, without their approval, they can't live their life as fully as they would unless that approval or was given. You can relate to this, I'm sure. Okay, think about someone right now whose approval you need. Just concentrate on it. Don't do it lightly. Just get into it. And for 1 second, just 1 second, see if you can sense the biological counterpart. If that person turned around, imagine the worst thing happening. Imagine that person laughing at you or walking away from you or discovering that person was involved with another person. I don't care what it is. You picture the worst thing that could happen. Then you picture that it has happened. And then see if you can sense that the biological response that you will have in your body if you've done this right. And if you have, you're going to have a biological response in your third chakra. It'll hit you right in your gut. Okay? So that you're going to begin to connect the dot. Where's the lead located in your cell tissue? It locates where the cell memory is. Biography, biology. Remember that. Your biography becomes your biology. So this is how you start locating lead in your body. You close your eyes. Give it a quick fix. Quick think. You don't have to go into deep states of meditation and tofu and incense and all that junk. You don't need all that stuff to get an energetic hit and read. Read the language of energy very fast. You simply focus and think, I'm losing my power. It's leaving. There's some situation here and I am solidifying my power. This is your third chakra, which deals with your need for that kind of approval from another person. Let's reverse it. It's the place where you reject others. Turn it around. If I said to you how many of you are conscious of not giving approval from somebody to someone that you know wants it very badly, how many of you could say yes to that? Okay. This is the most honest audience I've ever dealt with in the whole of my life. Silent, honest, quiet. But you all know what I'm talking about. I will tell you something, that when you have that kind of interaction and you know that person is longing for your approval, I'll show you something. At the physical level, you may have your reasons for not giving that person what he or she wants from you. Maybe you don't like the person. Maybe you resent the person. Who cares? I don't care, but you will have your reasons. But I will tell you, just so you know about the complexity of life, that from a symbolic level, you're under instructions not to give them approval. That didn't occur to you, did it? All right? The reason is because our task is to manage our own psyche. If somebody continually needs your approval or you theirs, you're giving them your psyche to manage, and that's not allowed. So from an energetic point of view, that act of needing approval or vice versa, it falls under the vampire archetype, or it could fall under the parent-child, or it could fall under the servant-master. Whatever archetype dynamic it is, if you need your power from another person, what goes on behind the scenes will be a carefully crafted, scripted dynamic that will inevitably filter its way into your physical life, and that person will reject you. Now, you can look at it from the physical world and say, that my heart, let's go into the fourth chakra now. My heart was broken, third chakra, because that person rejected me. This is your center of ego. And you can create a horrendous wound from this. And you can take that experience and you can freeze it into lead. And you can locate it on your calendar now. And you could say, that's the day it happened. And as the years of your life go by, part of you remains in lead on that calendar 20, 30, 40 years from now. Or your other option is to come up to the archetypal level and say, what is going on here? And recognize I'm doing the vampire number. No wonder I'm getting rejected. Actually, if I really understood that, I owe that person a thank you note. That's what's really going on here. Do you see the reverse? If you speak alchemy, you can actually see that what's happening is a supreme act of empowerment. Though from down here, your self-esteem looks horrible. Up here, you get rejected. You have an option. Either you empower yourself or you keep up this nonsense. That's how it works. Can that also be considered the orphan? Absolutely. The orphan archetype is very popular these days. Really, it's very popular. I probably have a good 4 dozen in my audience. And yeah, this absolutely puppets the orphan archetype, totally. And in many ways, that archetype is more than, you understand, it goes more than two parents. That's one level of where somebody feels the orphan in action. Your orphan archetype, I told you, child, victim, saboteur, etc., prostitute, are your survival archetypes that you need to deal with before you're 21, quite actually. 7 years per chakra. And let's say you haven't resolved your orphan or you're and resolved, you don't even need to resolve it. All you need is to know you've got it. Once you know it's there, you at least have the option of seeing yourself impersonally and archetypally so that you can be able to stand in some situation in your life and see it literally and see it symbolically and then work on it. You can take it personally and then take it impersonally and take both data, throw it inside, and move with it. Okay? If you don't deal with the child in the family, you will take that to the larger sphere of your life, and you will feel orphaned when you're in business, and you'll feel orphaned in your social relationships. You will never not feel like an orphan when that child part of you wakes up and goes to the party. It will be there. Do you know what I'm saying? Absolutely. Many of you ever experienced the orphan as an adult outside of your parental relationship? Yeah. And do you feel like you've put it to rest and you're done with it and all is well? Uh-huh. How about the wounded child? Do I have any wounded? How many of you are wounded, orphaned? Uh-huh. Okay. Well, we're going to do something now. I'm going to take you on a journey because this is the way I would like you to work with your life from the time you walk out this door. And that's that. The life is so rich and so much a journey that if you don't take it apart piece by piece, if you look at it too fast, you won't see it at all. When I ask you questions many, many times in workshops, I'll say, well, how many of you have no unfinished business? Hands will go up. Not many. Who would dare? But hands would go up. And I'll look at this person and think, I've asked you one of the most profound questions in life. And you've answered it like this, just like this, as if you would even begin to know that kind of answer that fast. I have asked you a question that should take you a month to think about and then 2 months to think that you had the nerve to answer it. That is a kind of question that you sit with, that you go through each chakra and you say, okay, I'm in my tribal chakra. What business have I finished? What's unfinished? I need to review my relationship with every single person I know. Then you go up to the second. Then you go up to the third. Then you go to the fourth, etc. Then you go into the chakra of the will. What choices have I made that I still haven't settled with, that have not been wise? and my spirit's still out on missions that are not good. What about the attitudes, beliefs, positions, postures I've held on people? Or about people or about myself, that's not good. I'll give you one nobody spots. What about the perceptions I have held about people and refused to change no matter how much they have begged me to replace their new image in that frame, but I won't do it. I decided years ago they were an awful person. He was an awful person, she was. And no matter how much they've said to me today, I'm sorry, I'm not that anymore. I will not take that picture of them off the wall because I know it hurts them and it keeps them apologizing. You move this carefully through this process. Maybe if I gave you a fun story, you can see what it would be like. So I'm going to tell you my version of the Wizard of Oz. Okay? You want a story? Now, you're going to help. You remember that story, right? All right. So once upon a time, Dorothy, now we're going to do this from a physical to an archetypal. Physical to archetypal. Physically, and, oh, this is a mess. Even I know when to clean up because we're going to do Dorothy now, so it's got to be cleaned up now. I am doing this because this is what you're going to do with your own life. This is not just fun and games. It's fun and games, but I'm actually showing you how to track your own life. Physically, spiritually, archetypally, so you can see your journey. All right, now here we're going to put the physical facts. This is the archetypal. This is the same way for your life. We're going to match. This is your meltdown in laboratory. I need to remind you of that. So this is your inner world. This is your external. So here is where you're going to simply log in the physical facts of a situation as your five senses determine them. This is your five sense world. Here, you get into your world of relativity where you have multi-senses. And this is where you can play games with what you see in reality. And this, if we're sitting around my dining room table with four chairs, you can't play games with reality. It's four chairs. Done. You can come here and play games with reality because you can decide whether or not you like them. What you can begin to add emotional, psychological qualities to them that begin to reshape the aura field around the chair. Here, you can only say the chair is brown wood and it's got fabric on it, but here you start and now you speak relatively. Fifth chakra, you say, I don't know, those chairs were so cozy, or oh, those chairs were so, they made me feel funny, whatever it is. You start presenting the energy of the object. This is the physical, this is the energy. I'm telling you that you can go into your house and log in every physical thing that's in the house, and you could go in, because everything has a chakra center, everything. Everyone has everything, everyone. There isn't one thing in life, your plants, your gardens, your animals, that doesn't have a energy field that follows this model. It cannot be otherwise. Creation looks like this. So you could take an object in your house, a dress, for example, and you can say, okay, this dress is this long and this, and it used to be this size, but now I'm that size. And over here, you could say, how does it feel? What's my memory of this dress? And et cetera. You go right on down the line, and now you're describing the energy field of the dress. Here, you describe what the dress means to you. Sixth chakra, who do you associate with the dress? Who do you remember? It has this full scope of reality. This is true for everything in your life. So now this is how you want to look at perhaps an overall story. First fact, and you begin in order. So we'll start here. First fact, Dorothy is from Kansas. Dorothy is, what was she, 13 years old? Okay, 13 years old. And what happens is, in the first like 10 minutes of the story of the Wizard of Oz, Dorothy meets all of the characters who would later become significant to her on her journey to Oz. She meets the woman she would see as the witch, and she meets the Scarecrow, and she meets the Tin Man, and she meets the Lion, all of whom play characters on the farm and in her life in a very loving, benign way. They would eventually meet her on the mythic archetypal level. Do you understand? This is exactly the way your life is. The characters that are in your physical world have mythic counterparts. That's just the way it is. There isn't one person in your life that if I took you by the hand and I'd say, come with me, come on, I want to show you something. And we stood behind an archetypal curtain and I pulled it and I said, look at that. And you could see who they really were in one of your dramas. And I am telling you that this is true whether that drama is intensely sad or intensely joyous. It doesn't matter. Okay? And then we have who? Toto, right? Our little guy. Is that the cutest dog you ever saw in your world? Is that not? Okay. From a physical world, Toto is a little doggy. And how do you drive a doggy? And oh, Jesus, that's Mickey Mouse. Oh, well, anyway, this is her little doggie. And she loves this little dog. And her little dog, she feels safe with, doesn't she? Right? Because, come over here symbolically, the word Toto in Latin means everything. Everything surrounds you. Everything takes care of you. I will provide you with everything. So even her dog had profound meaning because in the whole journey to Oz, the dog was her protector. Always her protector. So now you come back here. And what happens next? Okay. So the Wicked Witch tries to take Toto and then the little doggie comes back, and then to save her dog, she grabs Toto and runs away from home and runs into that charlatan who eventually becomes the wizard. Then she comes home. Now she comes home, and of course the storm has come up by this time. From a physical point of view, she comes back into the house. This is still first chakra. Here's the house, because your house is first chakra. And she sees that there's a storm on the horizon. Come over here. A house represents the self, okay, and the body and where you live, okay? And a storm and the tornado, from a symbolic point of view, indicates the coming of chaos and transformation. Okay? Comes like this. The next thing you know, Dorothy is doing what? She's banging on the door and she's saying to Auntie Em, let me in, let me in, let me in. The cellar is down there. This is the ground. I want to return to the earth. She's like Persephone saying to Demeter, let me back in. Let me go back to Hades. I'm not ready to grow and mature. But of course, they don't hear her because her time has come. It's time for her to grow so they don't. And to what? To become an individual. To move into herself. She's got to leave the tribe. They forced her out. Her orphan power needs to be matured now. If you notice in these fairy tales or mythologies, it is so intriguing that those individuals who become so very empowered as adults and who contribute so much begin their lives as orphans. And that these characters are so, and now the most popular orphan on the literary market is Harry Potter. But he is sent away, for those of you who don't know, he's a baby wizard, and he's sent away to a wizard school to become empowered. It is no different. I can take him and do this too. But so here, so Dorothy's got to get on her merry way because what's happening is the transformation is beginning. Now then, she takes off and she's afraid, so she runs back into the house. She tries to run back into her old protective field, but it's too late. It's too late. Once that handle of transformation comes to call, you've got to go with it. All of you have either had your first tornado or have had several or are caught in the middle or trying to run away. But you can't be involved in a journey of the transformation of your life and not have encountered a tornado. Okay? It's not possible. Or do I have a tornado-less person? Seriously, if you really have not had that kind of care, is that good? See? Okay. So now she runs back into the house, but the tornado here now captures her and lifts her off the earth. Do you understand the symbology of that? It gives her an out-of-body experience. Off the earth is out-of-body. Okay? Because the earth is your physical body, and it lifts her way into the altitudes, and she's in this house herself, and drops her into the next territory, which is Oz. And her house falls, and where does it fall? She falls on a witch. And of course, the first thing, remember I told you ritual stuff, is back to shoes. She's got to get her feet on the ground. So now the bad witch sister comes and says, look what you've done, look what you've done, look what you've done. Give me that dog and et cetera. The good witch comes. What do we have now? We have her shadow and her light confronting each other. Who's going to win? Okay? And so the good witch gives the protection and says, I will ground you first. Your goodness will guide you. And puts the little shoesies on her feet. So she then says to the little, and the witch, of course, threatens her and takes off. And all the little munchkins say, you've got to go to Oz. Then, of course, she's got to take off for Oz. And they tell her that's where you're going to get your power. Now, think about this. From this point of view, what has happened is that in the house crashing on something, it represents the experience of something frightening that will scare you, some fear that comes out of your psyche that you're going to have to contend with every single time you enter into a transformational process. You will release a witch, an inner witch, and it will cause you to have to deal with a fear. Got it? So, she then says to these, that she says to Toto, well, let's go, Toto. And she begins her walk to, we are now in the third chakra. She begins her journey into self-esteem and self-empowerment. Okay? So she's moving now up to the third chakra. She's got to fill in the self. At this point, as soon as she steps on the yellow brick road, she's officially letting go of her life as a tribal being, and she's in the journey of empowerment. She has to empower every one of these chakras, every one of them. So who's the first character she runs into? The scarecrow. And what'd the scarecrow want? Okay. So we've got the scarecrow here, and who's the second one? Tin Man, what's he want? Right, so we've got that one. And, of course, the fifth is courage. So we've got all of these filled in, each one playing a significant role. And each one showing up incredibly weak until and empty until she has a strength-sharing ritual bonding with each part of herself. She meets her heart. She has to mature it. She has to heal it. She feels abandoned by her family because she's an orphan and they wouldn't let her in to keep her safe when she needed them most, when her chaos hit. The lion, she doesn't know how to speak. She couldn't speak up for herself when the neighbor was about to take Toto. She couldn't defend what she loved the most. She wasn't strong enough to really take charge, and she now had to learn how to present herself, to be herself, and to become an adult. Here in her mind, it was time for her to come to terms, literally in each one of these, to develop her sense of psyche so that she could become a whole being. They're on their way to Oz, and as they go, what happens next? Huh? Now they hit the poppy field. And what happens there? They fall asleep. Now why do you think I'm going to walk over here? So now we've got the poppies. And you know, poppies are a drug for altered states, right? Did you know that when you read it? Did you think about it? Okay. I'm asking you that for a reason, because these are the same kinds of dynamics in your life that happen and you overlook because you don't take time to think of its symbolic meaning. But you know what I'm saying, that any of the physical situations that you are in could be the most profound of your life, only you don't see it because you haven't taken a moment to come up here and do the whole route of the lead to the gold. Okay, now, so they go into an altered state, very drifty. Hold that, and I'm going to take you into the scripture for an image. The same journey, this is going to sound like the sublime to the absurd, but the same journey takes place at the Last Supper with Jesus going to Gethsemane, if you can imagine comparing that to Oz. But he says to his apostles, physical world, after dinner, right here, he says to them right here, come pray with me. Come to Gethsemane. So here we go. They're at Gethsemane. They're at the garden. He enters into his inner self. I told you the name of the game is surrender. He enters into his inner self. But what does he find out is that as he keeps looking to his physical world, his companions sleep because they can't keep up the altitude. They're not capable of it. They can't go that high. They don't know what he's talking about. They can't feel it. Why am I telling you this? These are the reasons. One, as you move into your inner journey, you are going to want a lot of people to validate that for you. You're going to want a lot of people to understand what you're feeling and understand the kind of challenges that go in the world behind your eye. You're going to want a lot of people to understand how come you don't love what you used to and love something new. Or how come the way you want to schedule your world is not the way it used to be. Or that you're having spiritual experiences that they're not. And that, for example, what if one day you actually really do hear that voice or have some kind of meeting with your angel, you would run back to your tribe and you would say, let me tell you what happened. But in their theology, that can't happen. That simply can't happen. Here is where you need to be strong enough to say, I shouldn't have told them. That's right. For their world, it can't happen. It happens in mine, but not theirs. They're not where I am. And I can't dislike them or judge them or hate them for it. This is a profound lesson to learn. They went into the poppy field. They have an altered state. Jesus goes into the garden. He enters an altered state with the recognition that a lot of people can't go there with you. And he comes out of it and he wakes up the gang and he says, can't you even stay up long enough to help me out here? And they couldn't do it. It wasn't a physical thing. It was a spiritual, metaphysical. They couldn't hold the focus long enough like he did as a master alchemist, which he was. A master, and they called him master. He was that. Okay, back to Oz. Is that a bizarre way to go to Gethsemane to Oz? Have you ever seen that done before? So you know she finally makes it. The whole gang finally makes it to the Oz, to the wizard's place, right? And the guards, remember the guards? Or they were monkeys, and they say you can't come in here, and she does get in there, and remember the big circle and all the puffy smoke coming out of it, and he says, what do you want? And she says she wants to go home, and this kind of dynamic starts. And he says, bring me the broom of the wicked witch. And all of them, the lions, remember the lions sort of cowering back, and they're all standing behind her like this, and et cetera, and Toto's looking. Significant thing. What's being asked is a physical challenge. back to symbology. When you are going through a situation of transformation, of empowerment, you will be given a physical obstacle to deal with. It can't be otherwise. You will not get there free. There is a fare to pay. Consciousness is expensive. It costs a lot. Synchronicity costs a lot in terms of energy. This is expensive. This is not a cheap ride. Okay? So she has to do this major task. And so the four of them set out. And then what happens? She gets captured. Okay. Think. What would captured mean at the symbolic level? Because this happens to you. This is exactly what happens to you. If you can refer, as silly as this is, to the Wizard of Oz, you'll find yourself on this chart right now. What does it mean to be captured in transformation? Where is she? Stuck. Oh, for heaven's sake. I know captured means stuck. That is no way to answer this. You can't push yourself if you let yourself give such silly answers. She is here on the bridge. You want a map. This is you. This is her. You are right here when she's captured. Okay? Now, this is an image I want to give. Half of her reality comes from her physical world, and half is going to this world. She's on the bridge. This is the bridge. The transformation is in progress. She is now officially in the laboratory. Now, the captured part is this. It feels like depression. Depression is part of the capture. Confusion, the inability to get out, remember the actual physical circumstances and use a metaphor based on those as you read them in the fairy tale. Repeat, read the fairy tale that you relate to. Jot down the actual physical circumstance of it. She's locked in a castle and there's a timing glass, remember that? And there's this sense that time is running out. And how many of you have ever felt time is running out? Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. When you feel that way, have you felt simultaneously, are you aware or can you remember that you had a feeling of depression or panic? Do you remember any of that? Okay, that this is your, symbolically, this is your Dorothy in that palace or castle. I guess you'd call it a castle, where she is captured by the dark witch who represents what? The shadow, fear side of her psyche. Remember, from a symbolic point of view, Dorothy needs to confront that witch. She cannot get out of her inner laboratory or her prison until she confronts that witch and gets that broom. It's impossible. What does that mean? Here's a witch. Here's the broom. Okay. That's the dark psyche, the shadow. What is the significance of that? From a physical world, you say, well, it's just a broom. No, it's not. Come here symbolically. The broom is the power of the shadow. The shadow flies on the broom. So what she was asked to get is to pull out of her psyche all of the power that her shadow had over her frozen self. That was her real mission. The wizard sent her, from a symbolic point of view, on the mission to take away from her fears the power it had over her. Okay. So she goes, and now she's captured. And this is... physically, you could say, okay, Carolyn, the next step is she is captured and this witch says, oh, my pretty, and talks to her like this. This is literally and symbolically what this means is up here, you will have a solo, singular, repetitive, Carol, dynamic where you meet that fear head on. it might incarnate into your life in one strong relationship. It might incarnate in an experience, but it will meet you singularly on some territory in your life. You may have the fear of abandonment, only to be abandoned by something in your life, or to have such an intensity that you think you will be, as if it is actually happening. You'll be forced to confront it, or fear of financial situation. Something in each of your fears will come up. Then what happens is, after the threat, and there will always be the threat, your mind, the shadow, will play its roughest card so that you finally do something. The next thing is Dorothy goes to the crystal ball. Do you remember that? And she sees Auntie Em in there. Do you remember? She says, Auntie Em, okay, crystal ball. Come over here. In New Age thinking, the crystal has become synonymous to power and this kind of thing. From a physical, purely physical world, the crystal is only a stone. That's it. It's stone. It's pretty, but it's only a stone. It does not become an empowered talisman until you can take it in your laboratory and energize it through your psyche. From this side of the bridge, it will not be empowered over here. It's not, except to throw at someone and knock them out. Because it is a stone that is limited to 5 sensory power. It does not have multisensory energy. So from this point of view, what does it need in order to convert it? A crystal only has the kind of power you would like it to have. Perhaps protection or whatever. If you've been able to undergo a process in yourself of meltdown so that you have enough of your history into present time in order to change your frequency so that it is high enough to melt down the rock and transform it into the crystal, and in the process infuse your intention while that meltdown is taking place so that it solidifies and can vibrate your intention. This is a big deal, guys. And back to energy medicine. When I started to wonder why energy medicine didn't work as well as we thought, I'm talking about the late 80s, because in the early 80s, when I first got into the field, everybody that in my workshops was convinced that energy medicine would outrun allopathic medicine. That with energy medicine, we could melt down any single disorder that we ever had in the whole of our lives. That leaves and crystals could move and heal far more than chemotherapy or medication or whatever. Only, you know what? It didn't work. It didn't work at all. Healing was so rare that you could get a book contract out of it. It didn't work at all. As a matter of fact, if you look at stats, there's more breast cancer than ever. There are more disease than ever. There is explosions of illness. And in many people who are quite new agey, who live the organic lifestyle, and who do everything organic, and guess what? Diseases are rampant. What could that mean? I was intrigued by it. And trinkets and jewels and the stuff they would wear around their necks, and look at the opal that has this power and the wreck that has this power. But at some point, I sat back and thought, there's got to be some reason why all of that has not the power that we thought it would. That's when I started to look at our relationship to time and to space, alchemy, and what that had to do with energy, energy medicine, etc. Do we have a difference in relativity? Can we manage time and space? Does it affect anything in our body? Is there such a thing as becoming more ageless and more timeless. Having said that, then I started to look at my readings differently, and that's when I realized that the more lead you had in your body, the more WEIG you carried, meaning that you had to WAIT longer for everything to happen. Say it again. The more lead you have in your psyche, the more weight you carry. The more weight you carry, the less you can empower an object to turn and awaken its energetic capacity. It remains as weighted down in its psyche as you are. It works in a matching grant. If your psyche is 20% in present time and 80% in your history and everywhere else, and I give you a crystal and I say, use this to attract higher energy and more of it so that you can put it into your system and you can run it through a cell so that it can clean up the memory patterns in that cell and release it and diffuse it and get it out of your body. This crystal has got to contain an energy with the frequency of 89. Your body has the frequency of 20. In order to empower this, you need more light, more gold than lead in your body. You've got the wrong proportion. You've got to do some work to become more gold. What does that mean? It means you have to release history, dump lead, get abandon ship, throw it over, do whatever you need to do so that your energy rises and you can take this object and you can put your breath into it and it becomes a source of empowerment. This is true for all forms of energetic healing or with any energy force in life itself. Or aromatherapy, when you are 80% everywhere else but in your body, give it up. It is no more than perfume. It is not aromatherapy, and it will do nothing more than make things smell fragrant for a while, and you'll get a relaxation buzz off of it. But I'm telling you that the kind of healing that you're looking for will take a very slow time with that aromatherapy because you are so weighted down that you have to WAIT for the healing process to happen. So she takes this crystal. She's using a crystal, a source of empowerment, and she looks at it and she's invoking help. She's invoking a psyche. She's doing a ritual with that crystal. Now is the time to test her inner resources, because as she invokes, this is a seventh chakra ritual, the invocation with the crystal ball, her inner spiritual self. After she does the invocation, we're looking at what happens. The test comes for her sixth, fifth, and fourth chakras. Can they manage her transformation now? They do. They get her out, etc. The witch finds them together. They're about to escape, and the witch comes in, and she throws the fire at the scarecrow. Dorothy, in an instant, now you see the fire at the scarecrow, someone she loves. She comes to the defense. She's now merging with her lion. She's pulling out the lion inside of her and in the fifth chakra, and she grabs a bucket of water, which is her emotional shadow self, and she throws it on her shadow, and she just destroys it, just destroys the shadow. After that, all three of her friends are lined up. The courage is in place, the mind's in place, the power's in place, the broomstick they have, it's totally burned, and they go back to see the Oz wizard. Now they're standing there, and she says, here's the broomstick, now get me back home. What is she doing that's not okay? She's giving her power away. She's saying, you finally take me the rest of the journey. And what happens is, her everything, her little Toto, who's protected her the whole time,
runs over to the curtain and pulls the curtain back. Remember that? And he says, don't pay any attention to that. Okay? Which means that there is a source that happens in your archetypal journey in your life where you do meet fraudulent power. You meet people who claim they can help your power or who take your power in exchange for you doing something, for you being in, for being controlled. This is where, if you look, many of you can relate, I am sure, to the archetype of the servant. Do any of you feel like you are servants to others? What about indentured servants? Okay. An indentured servant, mind you, is somebody who's caught there by lack of money. This, men, women, it applies to each of you. I mean, you can be working at an office and you're an indentured servant. You want to leave, but they've got you because of a pension. That's a classic modern indentured servant. So the wizard can't fulfill his promise. Later, you see him in the helium balloon. He's on his way up, right? She wants to catch a lift with the guy so she can ride on the tails of his consciousness. Do you know how many times you're going to try and do that with someone? Not how many times they've done it to you, but how many times you might want to do it to someone else. Have them do the lift off for you. But instead, her everything jumps out. She jumps out to get Toto. Because why? She scoops him up because she has everything she needs. She always has. Turns around and the wizard takes off. She's totally depressed. That's it. I made this whole journey. I did everything. And what is she saying? It's something you've said 1,000 times and will say a million more. You've said, I have done so much. I've tried everything. There's nothing left, and still I don't get what I want. And I'm not where I want to be. And there's just no point to this whole thing. And this whole trip was a big farce, right? And what happens? Now comes the angel, the guide, who says, it has been a farce because you could have done this in the blink of an eye if you only knew how. Here comes the alchemist. If you only knew how to get yourself lined up and to figure out what you had to do next and where you were disempowered and to figure out what you had to do to get empowered and acted on it rapidly, i.e. just click your heels 3 times, 1, 2, 3, you could have done it and click your heels together 3 times, 1 for your 4th, 5th, 6th, and your 7 off and running. She returns now, having taken her lead, converted it, gone to a golden height, returns with a phenomenal insight of self-empowerment. She is not the same person, and she never will be. She is a full self now. She returns to Kansas, totally capable of taking care of herself, having survived a phenomenal initiation. And she says to Auntie M and to her family, you won't believe where I've been. And they won't. Because they didn't go with her. They weren't here in her inner world. They didn't go with her. It wasn't their initiation. You can tell everybody else, to the cows come home, you won't believe where I've been. And you're right, they won't. And they never will. And you can't be angry at them for that because you were the only one on the journey. But what she was able to do was take herself and get all of her circuits into one system, moving simultaneously so that she was as empowered physically as she was spiritually. And at that point, she could return to home her full self, and her journey was over. See? Make sense to you? Okay. You know, there's another story that reads beautifully from this vantage point, and that's the story of Gulliver's Travels. Because I don't know if you remember the magic of Gulliver's Travels, but it is very much an archetypal journey. in which he continually visits these marvelous places, the land of the giants where everybody is so abundant, and the land of the little people where they're so selfish, and et cetera, et cetera. But the most wonderful part is he comes home and he tells his wife, and they lock him up and they think he's crazy. And of course, he'd been to the journey of the best part of the soul and the darkest part of the soul, to the greatest part of human potential, to the lesser part of human potential. And nobody believed him until he's sitting in his kitchen and there was the little character that ran under the table. Do you remember that? And there he was, and it proved to all of them that this inner world that he had visited existed. It was a marvelous story. Marvelous. Do you have any questions, anything at all at this point? Okay, the question to ask at each chakra level for in that intra-analysis or prayer. One per chakra. How's that? Now, I want to emphasize one more time that in order to truly, this is something you shouldn't really even have to be told, but you do have to be reminded that you're going on an excavation journey, not a curious one. There's two different, and you must take time to let sacred information come up out of your belly. The first place information is going to, how it hits your brain is think of this. Insight first emerges, and then you qualify for insight to descend. Looking for guidance or looking just in the process of being and working on anything, you ask a question such as your first chakra, which is, remember that the first chakra represents the truth that all is one. Remember that. And so the question you want to look for is, where am I splintered on the earth? Where are my pieces? Where am I other than here? So it's a where am I question that you're looking for. In this question, focus in your physical world primarily, meaning I am in my history. I am, take a look. Remember, you want to look at your history. You want to look at your fragments in terms of everything from I am not happy with physically where I am. My spirit has gone on to live in a different place. I'm not in present time physically, and all the reasons you are not harmonious with all is one. In your second chakra, remember that this has to do with creation, with one-on-one partnerships, and the most effective perception or prayer that you can have when you examine and enter your second chakra is one of communion with union. And that you begin to see everything in your life as being in your life with union reasons, to bring union into yourself, to bring harmony, but that every single person is in your life as a messenger, as someone who contributes to your union. You look at life in that way through your second chakra. Examining it then, you say to yourself, with whom do I have a tense union? Whose union has caused me pain? Whose union do I feel jealous of, controlling of? Examine your unions and what balance exists between. You examine unions that nurture you. Why is this union so nurturing for you? Why do you love this union so much? Examine the unions that feed you and the unions that you need to feed and don't want to. The unions that you've been harmed by. The unions that you harm. And remember, you keep in mind that every one of these is a vital part of your life, your development, your spirituality. So you are committed to seeing every one of them as a vital union. Your third chakra, this is the center of your integrity and your honor. In this center, you want to examine in yourself your own honor code, your own integrity. This is a center of deep work. And here, piece by piece, you want to put together an honor code for your spirit that you intend to keep. And you ask yourself questions like, do I keep my word? If someone said to me, please don't tell anyone, do I honor that or do I tell just one person? Can I really keep a promise or my word to someone when you say, promise me you won't say anything? Or do you just tell the one person you would say, promise me you don't say anything? The question here is one of integrity and one of endurance, but mostly one of honor. You see, let me just extend it into one area so you can see the connection. A matter of honor leads to you automatically examining your relationship to your own self-respect, self-love, and self-esteem. And the reason it does is this. If you lack a clear sense of honor, then you will negotiate your integrity in order to have another person's approval. You'll sell yourself out. You won't be able to maintain your boundaries or your honor code, your boundaries or your integrity without self-esteem. You get self-esteem from having honor. They are intimately connected. In the fourth, you pursue in yourself the content of your heart, which can essentially be done around, can I love, what are the conditions under which I will love someone, forgive someone, and what do I need to learn about love, rather? What do I need to learn about love? What are my lessons? It shouldn't take you too long to figure that out. Okay. Emotions are everywhere in your body. I mean, take a look at this. Your survival sense is right here. I mean, emotions are full time. They're everywhere. You feel your responses differently like this. You really do, if you have a depression, a love depression, i.e. someone's broken your heart, you really do feel it in this area. The depression hits here. You feel lethargic, etc. Emotions are absolutely everywhere. But what I'm describing is where the experiences that impact the emotion are recorded. Okay? This is the cell tissue that the cell memory that will hold the experience is in this area. And when you deal with your fourth chakra, the examinations that you want are ones in terms of why, what makes you such a generous and loving person. You need to know this about yourself, as well as when you're not and why. You want to know both sides. The fifth is the big, great big huge biggie, which is why do I make the choices that I do? Why do you make the choices you do? You want to examine choice. This is great big huge because I want you to picture yourself in the middle. And this is where you keep your attention and go this way. And you write down, because this is what I know better. I know that I should do this. I know enough to know. You write down what you know you should do, what you know enough, and then you do this. But these are the reasons why I don't want to do it. And you examine that again and again and again. And then you, these are like formulas. Then you hit the second chakra. Fifth and two go together. Then it go bing, and the second chakra lights up, and it shows you all the areas where you want to get even, where you want to make someone feel badly, that you won't forgive because you want control over them. Look and study this. Second chakra's control. It's sometimes not as simple as one sentence. You have to build this. And the sixth chakra also is your apologies. Where are your apologies? To whom do you need to speak to bring your power back? Your sixth chakra, this is where you write about what do you know? I know better than to have this attitude, feel this way. The other side is, this is a truth I know I need to live by and to begin to take into your life. You know, it's a very rich thing to start incorporating these truths, even if you do it like a truthette. And a truthette starts like this. Start focusing on the truth first and then acting on it if you want to move it in slowly into your life. Just focus on what you know better, and then slowly it starts incarnating into your life until it reaches the fifth chakra, where comes the day when you actually have to act on it. The seventh chakra is finding a prayer or some form of mantra that means an just means the world to you, totally settles your soul. Make sure it's six words or less, and it's got to be a mantra, or write your own prayer that reminds you constantly to get your attention into present time. Always to get your attention into present time. Just picture those strands of energy coming in through that loop. You must have all your attention in that auric field. And finally, in your eighth, when you're here in your first world and you recognize you're losing power, you're losing your balance, picture yourself running through these three levels and getting to your archetypal level and saying, I need the story that matches this. Give me a story. Give me a story. Am I Dorothy? Am I what? Just give me a story. I need to hang on. Give me a myth. Give me an image. Give me a story so that you can get a higher perspective that you are under a contract and you're living an archetypal journey, and everything in this world is serving that journey. We've run out of time, and I don't know how that happened, but I want to thank you so much for joining me. Please go through this practice. Think of it as your inner alchemy. And God bless. I hope that this has been worth it. Thank you. Thank you.
This has been a Hay House audiobook production. If you would like a free catalog of books and videos offered by Hay House, please call us at 1-800-654-5126. Thank you for listening.